Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this. I don't know. I think it's fairly nice out there myself.
At least the sun's shining. Yeah,
I don't mind the cold weather as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. If you have to step away from your radio and you're only at a computer, you can hear the program on KKFI.org where we're streaming. Or if you happen to miss it, we don't want you to. You can go to kkfi.org, click on podcast, click on Arts Magazine Show. My podcasts go back for more than a year now, so in actuality, the show never ends. And isn't that a frightening thought for all of you out there? Welcome to the show. Some great spots to talk about with you today. We're going to go to the Lyric Opera, where they are preparing a show. And not too long ago, we had, in fact, over the Christmas season, there was a story here in the local media about the World War I truce that happened for at least one night during yes. World War II. I'm sure the guys that have come here today can tell us all about it. Craig Irvin is here. He's a baritone. He is making his Lyric Opera debut. He was one of the people. He created this role in the Minnesota Opera for its world premiere in 2011. He has also performed with the Fort Worth Opera, Cincinnati Opera, Los Angeles. Have you been with Los
sure.
Angeles?
Sure. Los Angeles, Chicago Lyric. Lots of. We travel a lot.
Opera Philadelphia.
Opera Philadelphia.
They didn't boo the opera in Philadelphia.
No, they loved it. They loved it. It makes them cry.
they boo all the ball players. Would that carry over to the opera? Thank you for being here on such a snowy day. I know it was probably hard to get here, but I'm glad you made the effort. Andrew Wilkowski is with us as well.
That's right.
He has also originated his role with the Minnesota Opera. He has also appeared, I should say, in Opera Philadelphia, the Florentine Opera, Glimmer Glass Opera, Opera Bozeman, Cincinnati, and the Boston Lyric, Florentine, Italy?
No, actually, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh.
Takes a little bit of the shine off of it when you say
well, it's exotic. Sounds yeah. great. I was going to ask you about singing in Italian, but you probably can.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we often do. You both do?
Yeah. The first language you learn when you mm-hmm. go to singing school mm-hmm. is Italian.
Also, perhaps German?
Yeah, German, French. Have you done Czech or Russian in
Czech, yet? Yes, Russian.
Wow. I have
Spanish.
Yeah, you know,
Hebrew.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've just done French, Italian, German, and English.
Yeah.
This opera has five languages in it.
It does.
Really?
Latin, Italian, German, French, and English.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's called Silent Night, and it is about the World War I Christmas Eve truce mm-hmm. that
yes.
happened during the
yep.
war. They actually stopped battling
yes.
for Christmas Eve, and from the film footage that they showed us over the Christmas holidays, soldiers from both sides were actually shaking hands.
Sure.
It's amazing
yeah.
how
trading,
that happened.
Trading packages, trading scotch, chocolate, booze, cigarettes.
Playing soccer games.
Singing Christmas carols.
Yeah.
How civilized we can be and yeah. how uncivilized we can be at the same time.
Indeed. Yeah. That's really, I mean, I think what this opera is about is how once you've shared an evening like that and you've become friends, how then do you see that person as your enemy and go on shooting them the next day?
Yeah.
If you liked Hans over there on the other side of the lines, it would be hard to shoot him, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine they had very mixed feelings about that. I imagine they were probably fearful at first of getting out of their foxhole and walking up and shaking hands.
Absolutely. And actually, the truce that happens in this piece happens at the end of the first act, and they play that out very well, especially or in the orchestral music, the tension in it and coming up onto no man's land and meeting with people from the other side. And there's a great moment that Andy's character mm-hmm. breaks that tension, and it's a wonderful moment.
It's really, Bill, at any second, this truce could have gone horribly wrong. Could have broken out into gunfire and all kinds of stuff. And it's a beautiful moment in the opera. And these truces happened all along the Western Front without any sort of prior knowledge or anything. But they yeah. happened in lots of different yeah. sort of military camps.
And in pockets. So some people could be observing a truce for the night while a quarter mile, half mile away, they were still fighting.
They were fighting. Mm-hmm.
And you could hear the bombs going off in the distance. And
how surreal it must have felt for those gentlemen. Being in such a situation has to be. I have not been.
Yeah,
but in such a situation must be frightening anyway. And how surreal it would must be to have suddenly stop and take a step out of this dangerous situation and then go back.
Yeah. Well, you also have to realize they did not expect the war to last this long. They expected the war to be done by Christmas, not to last 4.5 years. It would be kind of like if you were in a war right now with people from Iowa and Nebraska and Chicago and Illinois, because it's Europe. They're close. Mm-hmm. It's basically their neighbors. Now, granted, Iowa would win because I'm from Iowa. So I just want to let you know.
Well, I'm from Illinois. They'd probably lose.
I lived there for 3 years, in Chicago for 3 years, actually.
Yeah.
I miss it.
Now, you play the role of a German officer, a German commanding officer.
Yes, I'm the German lieutenant in the show. He's a wonderful character. I don't want to give too much away about the character or the show, because I think it's an amazingly powerful piece. And the less you know going into it, the more impactful it will be.
And the composer and the librettist just did such a magnificent job of capturing the, like we were saying before, the tension of this moment and the tension of each character. And you get to know the character first in their personal lives before the war even happens, and then you see them on the battlefield, and you get, by the end of the evening, you really get to know them as people. And I think that's a credit to, you know, not the just the performers, but obviously Mark Campbell, who wrote the libretto, and Kevin Putz, who wrote the music. They're just both terrific dramatists.
Yeah, the libretto is so beautiful. Every character has their own arc, has their own journey in a 24-hour period, basically, depending on exactly how you view the truce. Because some of the truces lasted days, weeks, until they were made to either move to a different front or made to fight.
They were made to fight.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah, yeah. They'd be moved to a different line. And then once the mustard gases started, it was harder to trust the other side anyway. But the characters in this piece, Mark Campbell did such a brilliant job of really making each character individual. I think he tells a story that the first act took like a week to do, and the second act took like 2 months to make it work. I'm exaggerating. You'll have to listen to him. They're coming to speak on Friday. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
I think Kevin and Mark are doing a
pre-show at
the pre-show. I think it's actually at the World War One Museum.
Oh, yeah, that is here. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a free event. Double-check on the website. But I'm going to be there just because I want to listen to them talk. It's fascinating to listen to how they put the piece together.
Yeah, it really is. We're speaking with Craig Irvin and Andrew Wilkowski, two of the singers in the Kansas City Lyric Opera presentation of Silent Night, mm-hmm. based on actual events that happened during World War One in one of the years during the Christmas Eve. They just took a break from fighting. How interesting. I believe there is an exhibit at the World War One Museum.
Oh, there has to be.
Which we call Liberty Memorial.
Okay. Okay.
When you hear people in town here mentioning Liberty Memorial.
I went there last week, and they do. There is a section of it sort of devoted to the Christmas truce, and they showed kind of all along down the Western Front where people had these truces, and that they stopped and played football and things like that. This particular story... it is based on real events. They took lots of different stories from accounts and then sort of put them all together in one sort of fictionalized version. So you get a lot of sort of the highlights, I guess, of those Christmas truce stories all in one story. There's an opera singer that is a soldier, and you see his story. And there's a guy who cuts hair. That happens to be my character, and you hear about him. And Yeah.
Tell us about your character.
Yeah, well, my character is Ponchel, and he is the French aide-de-camp of the French lieutenant, Lieutenant Audebert. And so I'm sort of his assistant. I go in every day and make coffee for him. That's kind of my specialty. And I cut his hair when he needs it. And we've formed sort of a nice friendship. And more than anything, Ponchel wants to go. Well, all these soldiers want to go home, right? They don't want to be in the trenches.
I would too.
But Ponchel's home is in the city of Lens, which is just like an hour's walk away from this trench. And he can see every night. He looks over the field, and he knows that it would only take him an hour on foot to get to his home and have a cup of coffee with his mom, hear the gossip of the day, and he could be back before morning. And more than anything, that's what he wants to do. And I also have the great benefit of playing a character in an opera that's full of people shooting each other. I get to make jokes the whole night, and I get to kind of like make fun of the other characters and drop a punchline here and there. And it's just a nice release for me, and it's a nice release for the audience to break the tension, kind of like Craig was saying before.
I love his character, because one thing that Mark did so brilliantly in the libretto and Kevin took into the music was the build of tension and then the release of a little bit of it with humor. Because if you just build the tension the entire time,
it's exhausting.
The audience gets tired. But if you build and release and build and release, finally there's going to be a catharsis. I see people cry in this audience all the time. I see people coming out with mascara running. I even did a video. Sometimes you can see the people sitting behind the conductor. And during one of the performances at a very amazingly beautiful, touching moment that actually involves Andy, I took my iPhone out and recorded the monitor, just so the TV screen, and the people behind the conductor just start weeping. There's a woman who has the ugliest cry you've ever seen. Andy's laughing because he's seen this video.
I have seen it.
And then there's a young girl sitting next to her, and she just puts her hand on her chest and then wipes a tear away from her eyes. And then about 30 seconds later, she brushes back her hair and looks to make sure no one sees her as she wipes another tear away.
It has that effect on people. Oh. Craig and I have been lucky enough to do this opera multiple times. And it's the fourth time for me, and it's the fifth time for Craig. And I have lost the ability to be objective about this piece of music. I'm just so in love with it, and I always love it. And it was interesting to me, the second time we did this was in Opera Philadelphia, and I thought, well, you know, I know that I love this piece, but maybe it's just me. And to go to all these different cities and see it have the same effect on different audiences in different cities, it is truly a masterpiece that they've written.
One of my favorite stories is when I did it in Fort Worth. The final dress rehearsal, Fort Worth Opera invited a bunch of military because there's a base nearby, and they wanted military to come see the show. Just kind of like Kansas City's inviting a bunch of high school age students to come see our last performance or our last rehearsal. But after the performance in Fort Worth, the cast went out to a restaurant nearby, and a couple guys in military uniform came up to us and said, "Were you guys in the show that we just saw?" And we all said yes. And they said, "This is the first opera we've ever come to, and it was amazing. We loved it. In fact, we're going to come back and see opening night." So they came back not only to opening night, they came back to the second performance also. Like, they bought tickets and paid to come see it two more times. They had never seen an opera before, but it touched them so deeply and so honestly that they came back two more times.
Yeah. Some people have misconceptions about opera. You must know.
Oh, absolutely.
They think they're just going to see some people standing up there singing the whole time. And the show's going to end with a large woman singing.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, or someone meeting the business end of a blunt metal object or something.
This one does end with lots of people dying. That is true. But the nice thing, a lot of people think new compositions have to sound modern and won't have beautiful music in it, won't be melodic. But
they have to sound dissonant or something.
Yes, exactly.
Or too, I don't know, esoteric or something.
Yes, too intellectual.
Kevin really writes from the heart, though. It's smart music, and it is also very, for lack of a better word, accessible music. There are parts of it that are just heart-wrenchingly beautiful, and then there are parts of it that are sound like you're in the middle of a battle.
Yeah, like the battle music. There's also the sunrise. This is actually just in the orchestra. It only lasts about 90 seconds, but it's after this beautiful chorus that all the men have sung. The German camp singing in German, French in French, and Scottish in English. They've all just sung this beautiful chorus about how they just, wouldn't it be nice to just sleep? To just get a few hours of sleep would be amazing. And then out of that, the sun starts to rise, and you hear it in the orchestra. And the first time I heard it, my jaw dropped. Like, literally. I just stared at the orchestra, and it's so beautiful.
I thought your jaw dropped because you missed your entrance.
No.
You can't read music very well.
My entrance comes after that sunrise. But I almost did miss it because I was just staring and listening at them play beautifully. And then the fugue started before my entrance, and I was lost two measures into it. And so I waited for the conductor to point to me, and then I started.
Good save.
Yes, that's what a good conductor will just point, and you will go.
Yeah, people think, well, we're just going to hear people singing. But there is a story.
Absolutely.
We're telling you about the story, and it's sung in different languages, and sometimes they feel we won't understand that, but I've always been surprised at the good acting that goes on while the singers are singing.
We try. Actually, there was a video made of this, our first performance in Minnesota. They put it on PBS nationwide last two Christmases ago, and then last Christmas it was played most places. I got to see it in Iowa, so it was good enough that they made a movie out of it. So I think you'll enjoy the acting.
Yeah, and the cast that Ward has assembled here in Kansas City is top-notch. Terrific singers and really, really terrific actors as well.
Yeah.
And it's really an ensemble piece. There's no sort of one star of this show as such. But
other than Andy and myself, there's no real star.
That's why they sent you to this program.
Obviously. The tenor's still sleeping.
Sleeping.
Just kidding, Sean. But it's really a top-notch group of people, and the acting is quite good. That's a misconception people have about opera singers, is that none of us can act. But I think nowadays it's surprising when you meet one who hasn't had some acting training, because you just have to keep up in the business.
Yeah, these days. And plus we're telling a story through every art possible, through music, through acting, through movement, and through art from the stage, the way the stage is built,
design,
and painted.
Design.
So it's the art of arts. And if you just stand there and sing, I think you do a disservice to the piece, especially this piece. There are some pieces you can do that with. This is not one. You will see battles. You will see fighting, hand-to-hand combat, guns going off.
Plus, just even to move around on this particular set, you have to crawl up a huge, like, 5.5-foot bunker. You have to climb up ladders. I mean, just to even negotiate the stage, you have to be able to move pretty well.
Wow. Yeah, but it's sung in, as you mentioned earlier, different languages.
Sure.
So if you're German, you sing in German.
Absolutely.
If you're French, you sing in French.
Yep. And sometimes when the lieutenants come together, when the three lieutenants come together to make the truce, they have to translate for each other. The Scottish lieutenant comes out and says, "Do you speak English to me?" And I say, "A little." And then he asks the French, because since he's a good Frenchman, he says, "No, he only speaks French. Why speak another language?" So because of that, Horstmeier also speaks, my character also speaks French. So he translates. So some of the best reasons to have a duet or a trio on stage is through translating to each other. So we're all singing to each other and translating so we can communicate.
That's one of the beauties of this art form too, is that you can have people singing at the same time different words, and it's not a big jumbled mess. It's actually quite powerful and meaningful. And Kevin, the composer, and especially Mark, the librettist, understand that there's no other art form that can really do that as well as opera. And so he, in the libretto, there are duets, trios, quintets, places where you have lots of characters singing together to create a really, really dramatic impact. And it's pretty joyful.
Yeah,
it opens up this, Saturday, the 21st.
Saturday, yes.
Yeah, at 7:30 p.m. Performances then continue. They have to have a few days in between. That's always traditional in opera.
Sure.
Wednesday, give your voice a rest.
Yeah.
Wednesday the 25th, then at 7:30. Friday the 27th at 7:30. Then a big Sunday afternoon matinee on March the 1st at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call for more information, 816-471-7344. They have an 800 number. Number for people outside of the metropolitan area, 1-800-OPERA-KC. And if you need that broken down for you, 1-800-673-7252, or go online to kcopera.org. We're speaking with Craig and Andy here, talking about this groundbreaking play. Have you been in a play like this before? I should say opera.
Right, that's fine. I actually, this is my first modern opera that I've been in, And no one has the experience that I've had with new opera, where I did an opera for the first time, and then I've done it five times now. I've been in all the productions in the States. You're lucky if you learn a new role and you do it once again, or maybe twice. But to do it five times or four times like Andy, it's very special.
It's a gift. I mean, you get to work on that character the entire time. Your character sort of evolves over that time. And I've had the benefit of doing a lot of modern operas. I'm from Minnesota, and so I work a lot with Minnesota Opera. And they commission this piece, and they commission lots of new pieces. And I was in a piece, an adaptation of The Grapes of Wrath. And Mark Campbell, the librettist, saw me perform in that and said, gosh, you know, we need a guy like that to be in Silent Night. And that's kind of how I got cast in Silent Night.
Well, you make people cry in everything.
because my singing is so bad. I know.
It's not your singing. I mean, your singing has a little bit to do with it. But
obviously, these guys are friends.
Oh, absolutely. One of the best parts about this show is there are two women in the show. One of them is on stage for about 17 seconds. I'm getting to it. But the best part is it's a large cast of guys, and every time they've been a wonderful group of guys. We've been able to hang out and actually we've been playing board games. We're going to go back and play Risk later today in the hotel.
It's a good character study for
this
opera.
It is a good, very good character study for this opera. I don't like to lose, and Andy beat me last time, but I'm going to take him this time.
Competitive, even in the world of opera.
Even in the world of opera. It's been great working with all the people in the show.
I'll bet. Yeah.
And the Kaufman Center is
We had the first rehearsal
amazing.
Yesterday.
Amazing.
Have either one of you, has Andy performed at the Kaufman Center?
No, it's my first time ever in Kansas City.
Oh, okay.
Mine too.
And it is just a stunning, stunning theater. It's a beautiful place to sing, and the sound is amazing.
Yeah.
And the lobby is amazing. I mean, the whole thing, it's terrific.
Did you sing in the lobby?
No, but I looked out the window.
You sound like a god. Oh, wow. Sing in the lobby. It's amazing.
Maybe I'll have my aria.
All that glass.
Exactly.
That's right. The costuming would be especially interesting. Did the museum help out with the costuming?
No, the original costumer did a lot of research on in Minnesota, we're using the same costumes, did a lot of research of the actual uniforms that were worn, and we have...
I've seen a lot of the same costumes. If you go to the Liberty Memorial, you'll see a lot of the exact same costumes.
Sure.
Ours are obviously replicas of what the actual ones in the museum, but
they're pretty exact. And I have this amazing coat that I get to wear. Andy's laughing because I love this coat so much. I want to steal it, but I keep telling people that I want to steal it, so I can't, or they will know it was me.
That's right.
One of the challenges, I think, of costuming this piece is that there's so many characters, and you're trying to make each one stand out individually. It was a challenge for Karin, the costume designer, but she did a really good job of sort of merging the identity of the character with their costume.
Yeah.
So when you see someone, you know, when you see your amazing coat,
you know that's
Hornsmeyer. Yes. You know, and when you see Aaron Wall walk out on stage, you know it's Anna Sorensen. Yes. She's the only woman in the show.
That was easier to costume.
Yeah. Well, Kansas City has the only, as I understand it, the only World War One museum in the country.
Yes.
And how ironic that this show would be here in Kansas City.
Yeah, it's spectacular. It's a great. I think it's a great opportunity for people who are members of the museum to see this show, and it's for people who are regular opera goers to maybe check out the museum and find out a little bit more about World War One. I mean, I went there last week, and I spent 4 hours there. I mean, it's a treasure that you guys have here. So,
sometimes people don't realize what's in their own town.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's just because we're used to it. I would be remiss if I didn't say we talked about it being sung in various languages. There are small little boxes behind each seat, and you can see the translation.
Absolutely.
If you don't want to see that, you can
turn it
off.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to follow the gestures and the acting.
Sure.
The performers make. It's easy to follow what's going on. Of course, the program gives you an idea of what's going on in the storyline as well.
Well, and that too, I've been going out and doing a little bit of outreach to some of the high schools that are coming to our final rehearsal, and I'll sing an aria for them. I've been singing Non Piangrai, which is a Figaro aria from the Le Nozze di Figaro, and I'll sing it, and they won't know what I'm saying because I'm singing in Italian, but afterwards I'll ask them, so what do you think I was singing about? Or when I said this, what was I saying? And they'll know because I know what it means, so I acted out in a way. I express to them what's happening and what's being said. So
it's kind of like seeing a terrific Shakespearean company, you know, perform something. And sometimes Shakespeare can be a little intimidating because of the language. But if you get a really talented company of actors who really imbue the text with all kinds of meaning, you feel like you understand every word. And I feel like that's the case.
That's
with
a great comparison.
These performers. Well, thanks, Greg.
It really is. The show opens Saturday, February 21st at 7:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, just on the south side of downtown, the whole new arts area downtown. Are they taking you around to the Power and Light District?
Yeah.
All of that?
I've been to the Jazz Museum.
Yeah, okay. That's a little east, but sure.
Yeah. That's over by the rehearsal space,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is near the rehearsal space, yeah. They open on Saturday the 21st. Performances continue then Wednesday the 25th, also at 7:30. Friday the 27th at 7:30. Closes out with a Sunday afternoon matinee on March the 1st, Sunday, March the 1st, at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Best way to get there on Broadway.
Yes.
As you're traveling south on Broadway.
I knew I'd get to Broadway someday.
Well, you're just a little off.
Just a little off Broadway, yeah.
But not very much.
and I definitely suggest coming to one of the first or second performances because you'll probably want to come back and see it again. I've had so many people come up to me after third or fourth performance, like in Minnesota or Philadelphia, and say, we came opening night and we wanted to come back again. Mm. Because it's a beautiful piece. I know I've been talking about that a lot. I love what I do. I love all the shows I've been in, but none of them are like this show. I live in Iowa, as I mentioned earlier, and I often suggest to my family and friends to come see an opera if I'm in Minnesota or if I'm nearby. I've told them to come see this one. I've told friends, if you ever come see me in one show, come see me in this show, because I'm very proud of my part in it and the piece as well. It's a truly special piece for me.
816-471-7344. That's the local number to call. Those of you in Iowa, 1-800-OPERA-KC.
It's worth
and
a trip.
That translates to 673-7252 or online at kcopera.org. I want to thank my guest for being with us and telling us all about this. It's quite a story. There was a truce during World War II. Fighting was going on because it was Christmas Eve. They had a truce. They actually stopped.
A moment of humanity in a sea of
shook
war.
Shook hands, got friendly with each other, but it wasn't long before the fighting resumed again. It's in this modern world. It's called Silent Night, because it was indeed silent that night, a presentation of the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. I want to thank my guests, Craig Irvin and Andrew Wilkowski.
Well done. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Michael.
It's great having you here. We're going to take our mid-show break. When we return, the Kansas City Repertory Theater has a new show coming up. It's actually two shows in one. Well, we'll have to let them explain when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. The big screen adaptation of E.L. James' kinky S&M bestseller, 50 Shades of Grey, finally hits theaters, and the results are a resounding meh. One of the year's most highly anticipated films isn't bad enough to be campy fun, and is about as erotic as a cold shower. Dakota Johnson's beguiling performance is the only thing this movie's got going for it. Jamie Dornan, as the titular billionaire, however, is as drab as his name. 50 Shades of Grey is 50 Shades of Dull. If you put James Bond on steroids, added over-the-top R-rated comic book violence and modern cynicism, you might come up with something like Kingsman, The Secret Service. Colin Firth plays an agent with a clandestine non-governmental spy organization who recruits a young apprentice, played by newcomer Taron Egerton, to go up against evil megalomaniac Samuel L. Jackson. While it's decadent and ethically questionable, Kingsman is so well-directed and energetic that it becomes a guilty pleasure. Julianne Moore is the odds-on favorite to win an Oscar for her touching performance in Still Alice, the story of a middle-aged woman suffering from early-onset Alzheimer's disease. Moore and the solid supporting cast make what is otherwise a standard Disease of the Week movie into something worth remembering. Timothy Spall is also terrific in Mr. Turner, a biopic about the famous and controversial British landscape painter J.M.W. Turner from the 1800s. While the film is slow-moving and austere, Spall's performance and the lovingly detailed production values make Mr. Turner a must-see for art lovers. Also opening this week, the faith-based film studio PureFlix offers us Old Fashioned, a Christian romance marketed as counter-programming to 50 Shades of Grey. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM.
Four very different people share one very significant commonality. They all move to Switzerland to be with the one they love. On Sprouts, Thursday at noon.
Imagine Midtown Kansas City with a vibrant cultural district with enhanced public spaces in neighborhoods and institutions. The Nelson Atkins Museum of Art is working to help develop such a plan and is inviting the community to take part in envisioning the possibilities. On this Wednesday's All Souls Forum, we'll hear Catherine Footer from the museum talking about this project. That's at 12 noon right here on KKFI.
KKFI's live broadcast from the KKFI stage at the 2015 Folk Alliance Conference begins Wednesday night at 8 with Bob and Diana Sukiel. Ruddy Swain, Calvin Arsenia, and the Expassionates follow in order. Tune in for this special live broadcast Wednesday night at 8.
Hi, I'm Jason Vivoni. The show I host, The Boogie Bridge, is turning 1 year old and we're having a big birthday party. Join us Saturday, March 28th at the Buffalo Room just behind the Westport Flea Market. Musical guests include Sean Clavin of The Dirty Truth from Springfield, Three on a Wire from Joplin, and my combo, the Billy Bats from Kansas City. The Boogie Bridge Birthday Bash, March 28th at the Buffalo Room. For more details, www.kkfi.org.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. So we're going to move from a World War One show to a show set, I don't know, it covers the 50s, the 60s. I saw it a number of years ago when the Jewish Community Center did it. I was blown away by the story.
Yeah, the Unicorn did it too.
The Unicorn did it as well. And we have two of the performers in the show here to tell us all about Angels in America, both parts. And on some days, both parts in the same day. So that makes it very, very daunting indeed. Peggy Friesen is with us. From what I was able to determine, plays many roles in this show.
Yeah. I do.
Several men.
half of them are men.
Oh, really? Yeah. Really? She, I most recently saw her in Our Town. She may have done something since then. But I recently saw her in Our Town, where with the rep, she's made many appearances over the years. She's been with the Met here in Kansas City, the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, at the Spinning Tree Theater, the Living Room, Kansas City Actors Theater, of course, the Coterie, American Heartland Theater, at the Unicorn. I most remember your show Frozen from the Unicorn that stands out in my mind. Has some credits from New York. Also performs as a professional harpist and has done films and television as well. Welcome back to the show once again.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
and you. Paul Oakley Stovall is with us as well. Also multiple roles in this show. So I guess that's pretty constant for the performers.
Yes. Everyone in the show plays multiple roles, actually.
Now, you did the rep show, at least Metamorphosis. You were at least in that one.
I am returning to Kansas City. It's been 10 years, but I'm thrilled to be back. I'm a Midwesterner, so I love being back here.
I spent a lot of time then in New York. I noticed here Lincoln Center is on your credits as well. Performed regionally. Toured with the show Rent. It mentioned Tokyo, so Rent went all the way to Japan.
There are actually two different shows. I ended up in Tokyo doing a play in Japanese. Wow. We'll talk about it after the interview. It's a long story.
Actually, had to learn Japanese?
Yeah, I did.
Wow. Yeah. Has playwriting credits as well as film. And his band, Into the Green.
Yeah.
Didn't think I'd mention that.
You got me on that one.
It's in your credit. Do you ever Google yourself?
I do not.
You should.
But other people Google me. That's and, right. You know, ask That's me, what's this band? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. A lot out there is to be learned about you out there, as well as Peggy as well. Now, the show is Angels in America. It was groundbreaking when it first came out. It's in two parts. The Rep is doing both parts in the Rep's 50th anniversary season. They're doing more challenging shows in this 50th year. Mm-hmm. Angels in America is in two parts in rolling repertory. So I took a look at the schedule. It was more complicated for me to give here. So I encourage you to go to kcrep.org to look at the complete calendar. But it looked like part one would be on one night. Part two would be the following night. Then on some Saturdays and Sundays, you would do both parts during the same day. Mm-hmm. How challenging,
yeah.
Peggy.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
I almost look forward to it, though. What we call the marathon, because you can tell the whole story. But both plays live on their own. You know, you can go see them and have a very satisfying evening of theater and not feel like you're missing anything. I mean, possibly at the end of part one, you'll say, "I want to know what happens to these characters." Yeah. But they do stand on their own. But what I think is most groundbreaking is the way the Rep is doing it. A lot of theaters, they'll open the first show, and then as the first show is running, the cast will go into rehearsal during the day and prepare the second show. It's very rare that you do them both at the same time. You know, we open them on the same night. That's tough.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's very thrilling.
opens February 20th at the Copacan stage downtown for the Rep. Boy, which one of you wants to tackle the basic storyline? I don't want you to give away part two by telling too much about part one, but who would like to talk about the basic storyline for Angels in America?
Well, I'll start and you can fill in. We'll both talk at once over each other.
Which happens a lot in the play.
Yeah, right. There are scenes that, I mean, rather than telling you storylines or something, I mean, it's set in the 80s, at the height of the AIDS crisis. But there's so much more going on as far as people, historical figures, ghosts, angels. It's quite epic in its scope, and it's more than just about the AIDS crisis. It's, I don't know.
Well, it challenges our humanity, you know, everything it means to be alive, to be in love, to live in the moment, and how fragile we are, and at the same time, how strong we are as human beings. How we can be gone in an instant, or how we can live forever because of the imprint we leave on people's lives.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier Peggy was in Our Town. That was directed and staged by David Cromer. So is this one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Interesting, though, the themes of Our Town and Angels in America, wildly different, but
very similar. Yeah. Yeah. And David has brought that to our attention, too. And it could be one reason why I'm in this show. I mean, it's wonderful to work with such an actor's director who can look at the whole scope of it and fill us in. And I got a taste of that in Our Town. And this is, oh boy, this is this is a huge bite. I mean, this that we're taking. This is just a wonderful.
And one of the reasons Cromer's so brilliant is because he does keep us in tune with the larger picture, but he's so specific about just do this moment, stay right in this moment, and the larger picture will be there.
Yeah,
because our human experience is so mutual.
Yeah, some of the actors after Our Town told me how exacting he was. One of the actors who had a very small role talked about how he even got notes on his small role.
Absolutely.
Cromer was very exact.
Yeah, I had a very small role, but it was his direction is very specific, not at all intimidating, but very specific and correct. I mean, he does put you in your place in that environment that you're creating.
And there's a freedom within that.
Oh, very, yes.
He's exacting, but you know, when you know exactly what you have to do, then you have the freedom within that to reveal yourself.
Sure.
So it's a good thing not to just be set off in the wind and, you know, do what feels best. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I read you started out probably by learning part one. Did that?
It seems like such a lifetime ago. I don't remember. I'm sure you're right.
It must seem that way.
We're in the middle of tacking both of them right now. And it daunting, maybe more daunting to the crew, actually, because they're trying to learn where do we – there's – how many beds are in this? There are like
four or five beds. Pine trees.
Yeah.
Huge red curtains. Mannequins.
Mannequins.
It's insane.
It's and there's not room for everything, so we have to – backstage, so we have to choreograph all the changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know my lines, but I've got to, on this day off, look back and figure out, oh, yeah, now I take on this chair on this scene, and this – I have to strike this, and then I
– while making a costume change.
Right.
A full head-to-toe costume change. Peggy actually has sort of the yeoman's – one of the yeoman's roles as far as playing, what, six or seven characters, and sometimes she walks off stage to the left and in about 10 seconds comes back on the other side, fully changed from head to toe.
From male to female to female to male. It's just – it's – at Wig City.
Wig choreography.
Wig choreography is we're working on right now. It's very invigorating and fun, actually. I mean, I'm having a blast doing this.
Well, I bet so. It's fun, but it sounds very – it sounds difficult for a performer to do. Do you ever get – in one show or not the other, a lot of it connects together. I remember
that. It's the a lot of the characters turn up in the next show, so there is a continuation like that. Mm-hmm. Except for, I guess, the rabbi. I play an old rabbi, and then I play the world's oldest living Bolshevik in the second play. And both of them start off the plays, and if you listen carefully, that's the theme of that play, is what this character is espousing within the parameters of the scene. And so it's I love those two characters who are totally out of my range. World's oldest living,
they're not out of your range because you're doing it.
I'm doing it
within your range.
It's amazing what you find within to do it.
From what I remembered, the way that real people were woven into the story.
Yes, historical figures.
I'll just mention one name. I don't want to ruin the show for people, but the lawyer.
Roy Cohn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way his personal and professional life was so diverse.
Brilliantly played by local actor Mark Robbins, by the way. Mm-hmm. Got to give Mark a shout out.
Yes.
And the writer, Tony Kushner, takes liberties, as any writer should do in a work of fiction. He calls the play Fantasia, so he is taking a few liberties. But you also play, Peggy, a
historical figure. I play the ghost of Ethel Rosenberg, which is a delight to do. She's quite funny, actually.
I just don't think of her as funny, but I'm sure you make her so.
Well, I'm not trying to, but I think she's hilarious.
Well, she's a real person.
Well, sure.
We read about her, so we assume a sort of mythology about how serious and difficult her life must have been. But, you know, when you play somebody.
Mm-hmm. And her relationship to Roy Cohn is just...
And there is, for those of you who don't know, I won't even begin to explain it now, but they are connected, quite historically speaking.
Yes.
The two of them were very much connected.
Mm-hmm.
And Roy Cohn had a double life, essentially. I don't know how else to say it without giving too much away, and I don't want to. Mm-hmm. But it all works into an amazing story.
Yeah, so there are these real characters mixed in with all these fictional characters, the main characters.
Right.
So it's... That's fun. That's fun.
I'll bet so.
And inventive. Yeah.
I'll bet so. The show opens, let's say February 20th is the date I have. So, and that would be part one.
That's Friday.
It is Friday, Paul.
Oh, boy.
Friday we have the first preview of part one, and Saturday we have the first preview of part two.
Yeah, and I'm not getting ahead of myself, but I remember noting on the calendar that some of those Saturdays and some of the Sundays part one was in the afternoon, like at 2 o'clock, mm-hmm. and part two was that evening at 7:30 or 8 yes. o'clock.
Right, yeah.
The same day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does it get confusing on days like that?
I don't think so.
Well, we'll find out. I mean, yeah. again, for the crew.
Yeah.
They have to reset
right.
for
oh,
the
sure.
right show.
I'm just counting on the crew for me putting the wig on, and then I know what scene is next.
Well, that would
oh,
help.
Oh, now I'm Hannah. Okay.
Having a connection yeah. with it like that yeah. Would be a big help. What kind of guidance, and that's probably the best word, does Cromer give to you? The storyline being the way it is, what can he tell you that made it easier for you?
Well, I don't think his goal was to make it easy
okay.
for us, okay. first of all. You know, he wants you to challenge yourself. I think he would probably take a certain pleasure in you going home and, you know, wrestling with it, trying to wrestle it to the ground. But I think the main thing is stay in the moment, explain the piece,
mm-hmm.
explain it. It is a big chunk of material, and yeah. We want the audience to sit forward and exhaust themselves staying with us. So you can't just blow through this poetry,
uh-huh.
you know, explain
yeah.
the show. And, you know, it was groundbreaking when it came out, 25 years ago? But this play talks about
yeah.
the climate. It talks about LGBT issues, women's issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could have been written yesterday.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's so relevant still
absolutely.
Today. It's almost prescient.
Mm-hmm.
And
the language is so gorgeous. It really is.
Yeah.
It's... Yeah,
it has such a respect for what's possible. What's mm-hmm. possible in each of us?
Yeah, you know,
we all have this poetry.
The '90s, AIDS was still a major problem.
Yeah.
Back in the '90s, not quite as much today. Although it's still around.
But the idea of—I mean, because even when he wrote the play, it wasn't so much about the virus. It was about mm-hmm. what it's doing to people and emotionally. I mean, yes, there's the actual specter of possible death, but as you say, it's not as much today. But it's about what does it mean to be ill?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you flip that and say, actually, what I'm doing is attempting to live fully for as long as I can, mm-hmm. no matter what happens?
Do you try to hide? I'm picking on Mr. Cohn. Do you hide that?
Right. That's one of the issues that's prescient today, too. Yeah.
Is that honorable to do that? Was
right.
it honorable or very dishonorable for
right.
him to do that?
Well, there's another character, Joe Pitt, yeah. played by another local Claiborne Elder, another brilliant uh-huh. Actor here from Kansas City. And his character is also living more, his storyline is more actively about dealing with,
uh-huh.
you know, he's married and what's he going to do? Is he going to hide or is he going to live his yeah. life?
Well, and later? He's a Mormon, too.
And he's a Mormon.
All this very heavy yeah. subject matter and decisions.
Right.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, it deals with politically, spiritually, emotionally, how do you deal with these issues in a very human way that
never gets dated.
No, it
really?
Doesn't.
No,
yeah. It really doesn't.
It really doesn't. And in the '90s, of course, this was still very much at the forefront and very timely at the same
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why it was called groundbreaking in mm-hmm. most of the reviews at the time, because they're being very blunt about a problem that at the time seemed almost impossible to deal with. And like
right.
most problems, it turned out not to be quite as impossible.
Right. And it seemed
there were medicines that
it
could
seemed
be,
isolated yeah. to that little community in
it
New
did,
York,
yeah.
but Kushner mm-hmm. expanded it to an illness on the planet, really.
Well, yeah. and up in heaven,
and up
too.
In heaven. Yeah,
we have, a scene in heaven.
He
yeah.
took
yeah.
it as far as it could actually go.
Yeah.
yeah. Tell us about what you mentioned Mark and one of the other actors in the show, who in the show that the audience would know or people from out of town that they don't know.
Well, if you don't know, Seamus Mulcahy, Nico Corti, Jennifer Engstrom or Jesse DiTino, you will soon know them.
Jesse DiTino has worked here before. She hasn't been in town for 7 or 8 years, but you may remember her from Shakespeare, the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival production of Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
She was Juliet. So,
mm-hmm.
And Tally's Folly from KCAT. So,
yeah. And as we mentioned, Mark Robbins and Claiborne Elder, who are locals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mark's probably worked at every theater in town over
boy.
His career.
He's incredible.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Really does.
He is an amazing Roy Cohn. you must see him as Roy Cohn.
Oh, yeah. The contradictions of Mr. Cohn in his personal and professional life. Mm-hmm. Both. But you have to see it to understand what I'm saying. Yes. I don't want to give it away. They don't want me to, so I won't. But the Kansas City Repertory production of Angels in America, both parts done in rolling repertory, often, perhaps I'm reiterating it too much, a performance of part one will be on, for instance, as an example, Friday night. Part two then would be Saturday night. And does it always follow that pattern?
No.
Except
no.
For the
no, you have to go to the website, okay, because the schedule is kind of it's confusing to me, so it must be and I'm doing it, yeah. So
all you have to do is show up
though. What are we doing tonight?
Yeah. Well, it gives you the opportunity to sort of say we can make it on Tuesday and when can we get back for part two,
right,
it gives
right.
you the opportunity to.
I do recommend that people see both parts, uh-huh, because you'll get so much more out of it.
Will they get more out of it if they see it in order? Is it
absolutely
the kind of thing? Okay.
Yes, I think, like, yes.
Part, yeah. If they make the mistake and see part one first, will they still be able to follow that, do you think?
No, they should see part one first.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, if you the only way you can see it is out of order, see it out of order. It's
yeah.
You'll still appreciate it.
I know.
I think part two is a little crazier. There are more scenes, more overlapping scenes. It may be a little confusing if you haven't seen part one, but that shouldn't stop you, because they're both, as Paul said, they stand on their own, and they're as theater. They're well, and when it first came out, it was a year separating
right.
them. Part one came out, and then he finished part two, and that opened a year later, so.
Yeah, I would imagine it was easier on the folks then, singing
yeah.
with a little separation, and the actors of the same actors
right.
followed as well. But begins February the 20th, runs through March the 29th at the Copacan Stage downtown, 13th and Walnut, the H&R Block building. That's the Rep's other stage, and they'll be down there for a while. When Hair ends, they're going to redo the Spencer Theater. So the next
yes.
several shows after that will mm-hmm. be at the Copacan Center.
Yes.
The last show of this season and the first show of next season, as I understand it, will be at the Copacan.
That's how I understand it.
And then the show that Peggy's in every year, The Christmas Carol.
That'll
open it up, the new space,
yeah.
towards
That's
the
right.
end of November next
right.
year.
Hmm.
But it'll be a whole new Spencer stage, so you should look forward to seeing that. But it's the Copacan Stage downtown. The number to call for more information, the Central Ticket Office, 816-235-6122, or online at kcrep.org. And this is especially important with this show, so you can see the dates, whether it's part one, part two, and some days you'll
Planning
get a chance to see
day.
Both. You can go to yeah. one in the afternoon and another one.
Have a nice dinner
yeah.
down
if
there.
If we can get through it, the audience can. We will survive, and you will survive too.
All the audience has to do is sit back and enjoy it. You're working up there. And the Copacan Stage, you're closer to the audience and more intimate. Does that help out?
It depends on where you're sitting. I would definitely try to sit in the front section.
Mm-hmm.
The back section is, you'll see a spectacle.
Uh-huh.
The set is incredible.
Stunning.
It's just jaw-dropping. It's beautiful, simple, gorgeous. Can't say enough about it. So.
Yeah. Well, at the Copacan, I know the chairs just go right up from where you are. It's a little different setup
yeah,
than at the Spencer. Have you worked in both of them?
No, I've only worked in the Spencer.
Yeah, but you've only worked in the Spencer.
Yeah.
So this is a little more
yeah. You see, the listeners can't see, but you see my head tilting up because
yes.
I'm. It's vast. So
yes.
it's an experience for the actors, too.
Speaking as an audience
like
person, it seems at the Copacan that you're right on top of the actors. If you want an intimate experience, that's it.
Yeah.
You're right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Angels in America, as I said, begins February 20th at the Copacan Stage, runs through March 29th. A lot of times, but you need to get to the website, look at the dates and the scheduling, just because of the rolling repertory part of it all. Angels in America, parts one and two, part of the 50th anniversary season of the Kansas City Repertory Theater. KCREP.org, and the number to call, 816-235-6122. 22. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Peggy for
Thanks
many
for
times.
Paul, thank you, Michael.
Once again, Peggy Friesen, many roles in the show. You've seen her at most of the theaters, if not all the theaters in town as well. And Paul Oakley Stovall, multiple roles as well. I last saw him in Metamorphosis.
Happy to be back.
Nice to have you back as well. The Jazz Insider is coming up next. KKFI is known for its jazz and blues, Kansas City jazz and Kansas City blues. Jazz from 1 to 3, then Lady D and the Blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.